Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Occupied Territory with your host, Mike Fader. We're going to get some calls today from various Occupy sites. There was a big clash out in Oakland just the other day. Hundreds of people arrested. City Hall partially trashed. Probably the most aggressive thing yet we've seen out of the Occupy movement. And as I said, a lot of arrests. So we're going to try to get some background to what happened there. We're going to talk to somebody who's a friend of mine and a reporter, senior reporter from alternate.org, and he was covering that. He's going to talk to us about that. And later on today, we're going to try to hook up with a couple of other, one new site that's forming, and one Occupy group is forming in Bergen County in Jersey. And there's going to be, hopefully, a call from Occupy Miami, which has its own run-in with the police having to do with evictions. It's, you know, like the evictions are happening all over the place now. But spring is coming. I mean, it's a bizarre day today. I don't know what it's like where you are, but in New York, it's like an April day. So, you know, you get in a car coming down here or something. The guy says, hey, it's a beautiful day, right? No, it's not really a beautiful day. It's a sick goddamn day because it's about 40 degrees warmer than it should be. This is called global warming. It's not called a beautiful day. Anyhow, more of that some other time. So before we talk to our first guest, Joshua Holland from Alternate, we have this announcement that came over from to everybody who's hooked up to these things from Adbusters. Now, Adbusters magazine, which is located in Vancouver, Canada, is credited with really sort of starting this whole movement out. Well, not on the ground, but actually calling for this movement, describing what it would be like, and inspiring the beginning of the Occupy movement. This was way back, I think, last spring when they started calling for this. And I don't really know exactly. I can't verify or vouch for Adbusters, so I might try to find out more about that. If you know, you can always get in touch with me. And the way to get in touch with me is go to prn.fm, prn.fm, our radio station here, online. Go to Occupied Territory. Just find the program Occupied Territory. That way you'll get onto the Facebook page. You can make comments on the Facebook page, and you can get in touch with me. There's ways to figure out how to get in touch with me. It's my website is called Fader Files, FederFiles.com. But go to Occupied Territory on PRN.FM, has information there. So Adbusters, I don't know exactly who they are, but they sound interesting. And there's an announcement they sent out. In this coming May in Chicago, there's going to be a simultaneous meeting of the G8 countries, you know, the people who sort of own and run the world, and NATO. Oddly enough, they somehow, maybe they'll cancel this, but they have planned meetings at the same time in Chicago, which is one of the reasons why Rahm Emanuel, former hedge fund, you know, multimillionaire and assistant president and mayor of Chicago now, drove through some laws through the Chicago City Council preventing anybody from so much as standing still, let alone camping or occupying anything. You can't spit, look funny, or do anything in Chicago. He's in advance getting ready for what's going to happen. So it says here, Chicago this May, G8 and NATO hold a rare simultaneous summit meeting. The world's military and political elites, heads of state, 7,500 officials with from 80 nations, and more than 2,500 journalists will be there. And so Adbusters is saying, on May 1st, 50,000 people from all over the world will flock to Chicago, set up tents, kitchens, peaceful barricades, and occupy Chicago for a month. With a bit of luck, we'll pull off the biggest multinational occupation of a summit meeting the world has ever seen. And this time around, we're not going to put up with the kind of police repression that happened during the Democratic National Convention protests in Chicago in 1968, nor will we abide by any phony restrictions the city of Chicago may want to impose on our First Amendment rights. We'll go there with our heads held high and assemble for a month-long people's summit. We'll march and chant and sing and shout and exercise our right to tell our elected representatives what we want. The Constitution will be our guide. And when the G8 and NATO meet behind closed doors on May 19th, we'll be ready with our demands, which are a Robin Hood tax, which is taxing every trade that happens. And there's like, you know, 10 billion trades a day, rapidly computer trades of stocks and bonds and God knows what else. But a tax on every one of those trades, which would raise hundreds of billions of dollars a year, wipe out the debt in a couple of years. So this is one of the demands, a Robin Hood tax, a ban on high-frequency flash trading, which upsets markets and ruins economies, a binding climate change accord, a three strikes and you're out law for corporate criminals, an all-out initiative for a nuclear-free Middle East, whatever we decide in our General Assemblies and our global internet brainstorm, what other demands we come up with. And it says here, this is Adbusters, who are good at stirring people up, obviously. It says, and if they don't listen, if they ignore us and put our demands on the back burner, like they've done so many times before, then with Gandhian ferocity, as in Mahatma Gandhi, Gandhian ferocity, I don't know those two words to go together, but they do now. With Gandhian ferocity, we'll flash mob the streets, shut down stock exchanges, campuses, corporate headquarters, and cities across the globe. We'll make the price of doing business as usual too much to bear. Close as you can get to revolution, as I've ever heard, called for in a mass meeting, and this is the G8 and NATO in May. So things are, it may be fake spring today, but real spring is coming, and there will be huge marches and assemblies in Washington. There will be all kinds of Occupy activities all over the place. It's going to come back with a vengeance, and you see what may happen in Chicago. Chicago, what happened in 1968 with the police riot in Chicago was a big turning point. It was one of the two or three huge turning points that had to do with the Vietnam War, civil rights, but especially the Vietnam War, and it changed the course of history in America when the police totally lost control themselves. We're not just talking about a few police, not that it's good or, you know, or it's a good thing, but, you know, the police these days have been, you know, spraying people with pepper spray. They've been beating people up. They've been causing all kinds of grief, abuses everywhere, shooting people with pepper spray bullets and rubber bullets. But what happened in Chicago wasn't anything like that had happened than anybody had ever seen. It was on national TV. The Chicago police, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these bullish pig-like police. They look literally like they're overfed, kind of crazy-looking guys with their helmets on. They were beating people almost to death. They pushed civilians. People were staying at a hotel right through a plate glass window. They hit anybody. They were like mad dogs. They lost control of themselves. Of course, not one of them ever went to jail or anything like that. They permanently, you know, they disabled people, they ruined people's lives, they beat people, they broke people's skulls, their collarbones, they threw people into trucks and cars. They really lost control of themselves. All of this on national TV, it was quite a scene to watch, and it was one of the defining, changing moments in the anti-war movement. So this is the famous Chicago, where Mayor Daley, when he was asked, how could the police act like that? And he said, the police is not here to create disorder. The police are here to preserve disorder. The famous line by Mayor Daley, to preserve disorder, indeed. So this is going to happen in May in Chicago, and we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, we have our first guest on, Joshua Holland. You there?
I am. How you doing, Mike?
Okay, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Okay, Joshua is a senior writer and editor for Alternet. Author also of a very good book called The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy and Everything Else the Right Doesn't Want You to Know About Taxes, Jobs, and Corporate America. Although we are learning more now, aren't we?
We are, yes. We are. We can thank Newt Gingrich for that.
Yeah, the Occupy movement and the Republican primaries are all educated.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. Yeah, we're living in a surreal moment.
Who would have known? You know, I was just reading about this call by Adbusters to show up in Chicago on May 19th when the G8 group and NATO are meeting there simultaneously. So that's going to be kind of a dangerous, outrageous, overwhelming thing, I think. You know?
Yeah, and isn't this the first G8 meeting in the United States for maybe forever or 20 years or something like that?
I don't, you know, I get confused because it's G16, G20, WTO. I start losing track of who's where, but this, to have them both.
Yeah, I may be wrong about that, but I think that this is a first or a first in a very long time.
Well,
things get very hairy in Europe.
Yeah, and to imagine what's going to go on here in Chicago. I mean, with Adbusters calling in advance for outright defiance and even aggressive tactics, I mean, it's really, now you begin to understand why the drones and the militarization of the police. I almost fear for what might happen there, but you'd have to have a lot of nerve to show up there this May, all things considered. And I was going to ask
I wouldn't discourage people.
I'm not discouraging people. I'm just saying that there are a lot of people, and I hope they do go there. And I'm going to encourage people to go there, although, you know, I mean, it's a little facile. I mean, I'm not going to be there all 66 years of my, you know, of my bones are not going to make it to Chicago because, you know, whatever. But, you know, and I am going to urge people to be there. I'm going to take reports and updates and everything. Maybe you'll be there covering it. I don't know.
Perhaps I will, yeah.
So I want to ask you one question. We're going to talk about what happened in Oakland the other day, this massive thing that got kind of out of control. And, you know, the headline in the Times is hundreds, well, the Times, right? Hundreds held after violence at Occupy Oakland protest. Of course, that's good enough. They don't say who the violence came from, but we'll talk about
right.
that. One question I wanted to ask you, though, is that do you know anything about Adbusters, who they are, what they're doing?
Well, I mean, Adbusters, I don't know a ton about Adbusters. It's a provocative Canadian anti-capitalist magazine, and I tend to think that the people who are most surprised at the traction that the Occupy movement has gotten must be those at Adbusters, because they've done a number of campaigns like this over the years that nobody noticed. And they called for people to, you know, come out and occupy Wall Street, and they did, which must, again, be really a surprise to the folks at Adbusters. I don't think that they have a lot to do with the Occupy movement since that first call to arms.
Well, this one is, there's nothing vague or uncertain about what they're doing here. It's astounding. I mean, I could always send this to you in case you didn't read it, but it's just, they're basically calling.
I didn't read it. Yeah, send it to me.
They're calling for almost something like almost outright revolution here. But they're using the word Gandhian ferocity. So
Gandhian ferocity.
Yeah, interesting combination of words.
I'm sure the Chicago police will comply with they will play the Brit in that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's nothing more like the upper class British Raj than the Chicago cops. yeah, well, let's see, you know. So meanwhile, out in Oakland the other day, I'll read from the New York Times, or I won't read, I'll just, you know, summarize the New York Times, of course, which is already decided that the Occupy movement was a blip in history that happened last fall,
yes.
And it's dead and buried. And they'd like it to be for some reason I don't understand. But I don't know what bothers them about change and revolution, but they really don't seem to like it. So
no, they don't.
And they're quite representative of, you know, I don't know what, 70-80% of the media-fed public. So they're saying that they seem to be pretty balanced in their reporting here, but they show this anguished picture of poor Mayor Jean Kwan.
Yeah.
With her hands up at City Hall with a turned over, destroyed or knocked over anyhow, imitation, whatever it is, building of the City Hall. And apparently a flag was burned, some other stuff was trashed, and all kinds of things happened, and hundreds of people got arrested. So what did go on from beginning to end out there in Oakland?
Well, I mean, this is always the important thing to get right is the chronology. So they had called it the move-in day, and, you know, the camp in front of City Hall has been disbanded, cleared out on two occasions. And what they said, Occupy Oakland decided we're going to take over an abandoned city-owned building, a building that there's no plans to do anything with, that hasn't had any occupants for 6 years. And everybody knew that there was going to be a clash. The police knew and the occupiers knew. And what happened was that they marched, they rallied at Frank Ogawa Plaza, their erstwhile home, and they walked towards this building. They got there.
Let me stop you for a second. So the police knew what they were going to do. And,
oh, yeah, they were prepared.
Okay.
I mean, you know, they had it on their website.
So, and this is a building which has been, it's city-owned property, which is to say it belongs to anybody who lives in the city who's a citizen, right? It's city-owned property. And,
it's city-owned property, yeah. But it's, I mean, it's closed. You're not allowed to go in there.
Is there a fence around? Was there a fence?
I should actually correct one thing. They didn't say exactly which building that they were going to take over.
Okay.
That was kept off of their website, but there are only so many buildings that fit the description. So the police, and I think that it was leaked because the police were waiting for them.
Ah, okay. So there they are lined up around the building and the Occupy movement.
And there's skirmish lines of riot police.
Okay.
And this is the thing that I think is really a crucial thing to understand. At some point, a couple of people in the crowd threw objects at the police. You know, a lot of people out in Occupy Oakland would say, oh, these are police undercover, agitators. I don't know that that's, I don't think that that's true in every case, and either way it has the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
What the police did was they responded by tear gassing the crowd. Now, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there are kids in the crowd, and the Oakland Police Department's own crowd control guidelines say that if a couple of people get unruly or throw things, you're not allowed to tear gas the crowd.
Mm.
And what this does is it infuriates people. Everybody knows that they're not allowed to do this, according to their own guidelines. And it also hurts really badly. And again, you know, there were children in the crowd. And so what happens at that point is that the tension just becomes ratcheted up.
Mm-hmm.
It's poor crowd control tactics. And this is the part that the New York Times is never going to tell you. So they retreat from this building, and they go back to the plaza. And at this point, they regroup, and they said, you know, we're going to have a period where you can rest and get some food and some water, and then we're going to go out on another march,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly to go and find another building. But they never got to whatever their intended destination was, because right away when they left the plaza, police started herding them along a route that they wanted them to take.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to kettle them. This is a word where I don't know what the origins of this word is, but if you have listeners that don't know what this means, it's when police block a group of protesters in.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally that's followed by mass arrests.
Well, in the city here, they were using that orange plastic mesh. They did it on the Brooklyn Bridge, 700 people.
Right,
they just
we don't have mesh out here. We don't have that orange stuff, although I've seen that certainly at the RNC convention, which I covered in 2004. That was the first time I'd seen that orange net.
Mm-hmm.
So they kettled them in a small square that had an abandoned lot next to it, that was surrounded by chain link fence. And the protesters got out by cutting through the fence and getting and basically escaping the kettle.
Hmm.
Four blocks later, and this is where you see some kind of reporting from a lot of the mainstream media, they get to another spot and are again kettled. And this is when some protesters, and I don't know the exact number, run through the YMCA building,
mm-hmm.
to evade the kettle. This is where almost, not all, but almost all the arrests took place. So this is a crowd of marchers, and they basically arrested, depending on whose figures you accept, according to the police's own figures, crowd size estimate, they arrested about 20 or 30% of everybody who showed up for this action. So it was a really large dragnet, and they swept up some journalists. I think that there were 4 or 5 journalists arrested, including an alternate contributor, a contributor for Mother Jones, some other journalists. And at the same time, you had about 50 people that did not go on this march who broke in, and I don't know how they broke in. This is a point of some contention.
Mm-hmm.
Broke into City Hall and ran amok, if you will.
Really?
And they did indeed damage things in City Hall.
And
so,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You have a question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, what's been going on in Oakland seems to be more aggressive, to use a certain word, than almost any other place we've seen. The people,
absolutely. It's,
yeah.
it's a very militant occupation. And I think that whenever I talk about Oakland, I always remind people that long before there was an Occupy movement, there was an enormous amount of tension between police and city officials and the quote-unquote community.
Now, we're talking about a police department here that was so out of control for so long that the federal government almost had to take them over, in fact, still sort of supervises them, right?
They are under, yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. They are under a consent decree from a 2003 case where a number of their officers, a rogue group of officers, were found criminally liable, but it was a scandal emerged when it was alleged that they had been beating suspects and planting evidence on them.
Mm-hmm.
They were fired. Again, they were not criminally prosecuted, but they were fired. And the entire department was put under a federal consent decree with a federal monitor. I think 6 weeks ago, that monitor came out with a report that was very damning about the frequency with which OPD pulls their guns and points them at people.
Right. I saw something about that, and then there was some consideration of taking even further steps to deal with the police department, right?
Yeah, so, okay, that's one piece of it, and maybe this is too in the weeds for your show, I don't know, but there's another piece of this, which is that they also had a case against them, a class action suit in 2003, when they used wooden bullets and I think tear gas as well on peaceful anti-Iraq war protesters.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of this suit, they settled that suit and they drew up the guidelines that they're now ignoring. And one of the interesting things is that so now the ACLU of Northern California, the National Lawyers Guild, are suing OPD to try to compel them to follow their own guidelines.
Is there a way? So if the lawyers are involved, and I know the National Lawyers Guild was on the spot here in New York City when people got evicted.
They're out here too, yeah.
You know, and, you know, thank God for them or whoever for them. But is there any way, I mean, obviously what's available to lawyers all the time is a temporary injunction against the police acting in any way, starting like right now, right? I mean, are they trying to do that to immediately stop
right.
the police? Because these police are on the verge of being totally out of control.
Right, right. So they requested a temporary restraining order against OPD, and the judge turned them down.
Huh.
The case is pending. There was a temporary supervisory order issued, I think, just 2 weeks ago, that has them have to do various reporting. But the case is, again, pending, and I've spoken to the lawyers on this case. I've reported on this case as it kind of wended its way through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue always with litigation is, if you don't get your temporary restraining order, then it takes a very long time.
Sure, yeah.
The whole process takes a very long time. So in the meantime, I imagine that, you know, the judge is watching all of these events and seeing what's going on. And it will all feed into, you know, his ultimate decision.
So let's go back to the scene of the alleged crime, or maybe crime. I mean, first of all, when people are there and they're confronting the police, they know that they're going to, if they step forward into property, which theoretically doesn't belong to them, of course it does, but that's a whole larger issue. But if they're going to step forward into property, which the police say no one can trespass in, that's breaking the law, and they will be arrested, so they know that. But this idea of people...
And, I mean, vandalism is breaking the law.
Trespassing,
I mean,
vandalism, whatever it is, disturbing the peace, it's all against them. So they know, you know,
we shouldn't pretend that this isn't happening.
This
is the one thing that troubles me with you know, some of the Occupy supporters who I speak to, is they just kind of shrug this element off. It's very counterproductive to the movement. It creates a lot of bad media, and it exists. There are people, and they are a very small number. This is the thing that I will always stress. They're a very small minority. They're idiots who want to make trouble, and they're coming out to mess with the cops.
We had that constantly in the 60s when we were out there, like, well, all the anti-war marches and demonstrations I was in. I can't say we were Gandhian-like, but we weren't
right.
attacking anybody, and we were just carrying signs, making a lot of noise. We were illegally assembling, whatever, blocking traffic. But there
right.
was always a couple of people that thought it was cool or funny or we weren't going far enough, and they would throw batteries, they'd throw screwdrivers
yep.
at the cops, and that was the end of that. Then it was the horses, it was the batons, it was whatever they had at the time. You know,
right, and now it's the same thing, but it's flashbang grenades, and it's... beanbag shotgun rounds, and it's rubber-coated steel bullets, and it's tear gas.
But this kind of behavior by some of the people in the crowd, which has its inevitable result because the police are the police, and
yeah.
they're going to respond this way, it must drive some people, the main people in the occupation at Oakland and everywhere else that this might happen, but it seems to happen out there. It happened in Chicago, it happened in a couple other places. But it must drive them completely nuts. They're trying to show the whole world. I mean, after all, Gandhi... seem to be able to have, maybe it's a different culture we're talking about. Well, it is a different culture, America and India, right? Indians and Americans.
But I mean, I think Gandhi very, very intentionally cultivated that image.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was more than an image. I mean, he had people so clearly instructed and supervised to take whatever they, and they took a lot of, a lot of them were beaten to death by the police when they were advancing on factories and things like that. They were literally beaten to death. Their lives were never the same. Their skulls were broken and their brains didn't work right. And he said, this is what you pay. You don't get something for nothing. And yet, you know, this is very bad. And then, like you mentioned, the media looks at this, and they're so ready already to call it a bunch of loons or anarchists or crazy people.
Their bias is so clear. You know, that New York Times report that you saw was fairly balanced.
It was for the New York Times.
Did you see the AP piece on that same thing?
No, no.
Oh, my God. I mean, they. I think it had 26 paragraphs, and the first 24 paragraphs were just city and police officials' stories.
Oh, well, you know.
And then at the bottom, they gave you, like, one paragraph from a press release of Occupy Oakland.
So where do things stand? I mean, we're gonna take some calls from other Occupy sites in the next 20, 30 minutes. But where do things stand now in Oakland? A lot of people have been arrested. So what's the state of the Occupy movement in Oakland right now?
Well, this is an interesting angle because there's also this kind of much quieter assault on the occupation being waged through legal means that aren't about protests and aren't about people throwing things. The police have started to enforce, in a very dramatic way, all sorts of obscure ordinances. So people have been arrested for having their bicycles in the plaza, for having blankets in the plaza. And a lot of times, you know, I don't think this is the case when they swoop up 400 people because they can't hold them, but when they arrest them in small numbers, and these are often targeted arrests where they're looking for activists that they know, they hold them for a long time. And it takes a long time. Somehow it's a lengthy process to get an arraignment. It's a lengthy process. They're not just being cited and released.
No, that's sure. They did that. They do that here too. Well, suddenly people sort of disappear into the system for a while.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And they cool their heels for, you know, sometimes a week, 10 days, for misdemeanors. I mean, not even for the felonies.
Well, we have to move on and take some other calls here.
Okay.
But I wanted to clear this up. If you're just tuning in here, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you want to?
But the occupation out in Oakland is strong, and I don't want to make, you know, I want to make that clear. It's going on. There's many events being planned.
So a lot of actions being planned. I know Oakland, you know, we talked to some people, as I mentioned to you off the air, we talked to, on Sirius, I interviewed a couple of truck drivers out at the port of Oakland, and they were very much in favor of the day that the Occupy movement shut down or attempted to shut down the port of Oakland to make points about things. But so one last question let me ask you before we move on. I guess maybe a two-part question. One is, with this kind of behavior by certain people in the crowd, and literally, no matter what happened, some people got into City Hall and trashed the place. I mean, you know what that looks like to 95% of the rest of the country who don't know any better and don't think in a deeper, wider way.
Even people who do know better, even supporters of the Occupy movement, you know, local supporters are... You know, it's infuriating.
So I guess what on earth, I mean, are meetings held out there in the General Assembly? How are they going to deal with this kind of out of control stuff?
Well, I mean, Mike, this is not the first time, and I'd say that this is one of the, you know, one of the most frequently discussed issues in the GAs out in Oakland.
Mm.
So one of the problems that we have, or one of the problems that they have, is inherent in this, you know, leaderless, horizontal movement. It's very, very hard for them to condemn the autonomous actions of others, even when they will personally do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go out there and talk to people and they'll say, God, this is so stupid. And they're making, they're putting me in danger. They're putting me in danger of police violence when they do this. But at the same time, they can't, you know, they can't condemn others' actions, and that's, you know, this is, you know, Gandhi was a leader.
I was just, you know, I was just going to...
He was setting...
Yeah, I was just going to bring him...
standards.
I was just going to bring him up because they had a very, very clear structure over there about what to do and who was in charge and who was in charge above who was in charge, and it worked. You know, this horizontal thing is terrific for all sorts of reasons. But I really feel, just my personal opinion, that there's a limit to how far it can go. You know,
I do too. Yeah. I do too. And another thing is that I wish that, you know, we would acknowledge there's no such thing as a leaderless movement. People emerge because they're willing to work hard, or their organizational skills are really good, or they're charismatic. There are people who emerge as de facto leaders. You can't call them that, but they are. So I sometimes feel like, let's just stop the fantasy that there are no leaders here.
Right.
And have these leaders step up and, you know, lead.
I've had the same thing happen. I've had Kevin Zeis, who is actually the leader of Occupy DC. And,
right.
And you know, I interviewed him on the air, and I said, well, you know, you're in the leadership of Occupy DC. And he was very clearly, you know, he said, oh, no, I'm, you know.
Can't call me that.
Meanwhile, every press release, every 2 minutes that comes out, signed Kevin Zeis. But, all right, so. I got to move on, but thanks. Joshua Holland is who we've been talking to, and he's a senior writer and editor for Alternate. Check out Alternate all the time, every day. It's the best place online to get materials and articles and what's going on, up to date on the Occupy movement and everything else that's going on the left with progressives. It's just as good as it gets. Alternate.org.
And I have a piece up from about Saturday.
Joshua does, in fact, have a recent piece up about what happened Saturday in Oakland, and he's a good writer, and he tells the truth. He's a good journalist. So there it is. Check it out, alternate.org, and it's Joshua Holland. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Okay, I'll talk to you again.
Okay.
This is Mike Fader, and the name of the show is Occupied Territory. You want to find out more about me or the show, which is more important, and the movement, which is even more important. This show is devoted to the Occupy movement, and you can go to prn.fm and just find Occupied Territory. You can find out more about the show, and you can also check in with our Facebook page. You can post videos, comments on the show, any comments you want about Occupy, good, bad, and different, and I welcome all of that for Facebook. Right now, we have somebody from a new group that's forming in Bergen County, which is in New Jersey, Occupy Bergen County, and it's Mitchell Livingston, who is on the line with us. Hi, Mitchell.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Okay. So maybe you can tell us a little bit. We got a couple of minutes. You can tell us a little bit about what the group is, when it was formed, and what the goals are.
The group was formed fairly recently. We were kind of formed from a parent group. Well, it's not actually an Occupy group, but called Bergen Grassroots. And a number of the members, Bergen Grassroots is a political action group in Bergen County, and we wanted to get a member consensus on if we wanted to get involved in the Occupy movement or form our own Occupy movement. About 40 to 50 members decided that this would be a good idea, and we formed Occupy Bergen County, and we are now autonomous from Bergen Grassroots, and we're kind of in the formative stages at this point.
Do you have a website or a place where people can check online yet? Do you have that?
Yeah, we do. We have we're on Facebook under Occupy Bergen County.
That's B E R G E N Bergen County, right?
Right. For your listeners outside of the New York area, that's the northernmost county in Bergen County. We have about a million people there. We're the most populous county in the state, and
in New Jersey,
also a number of one percenters. The group is actually. I would say we're obviously not involved in any kind of encampment, but we're kind of a more mature group at this point.
Old people.
House of Cockers, like
you
know.
Okay. All right.
We are hoping to, of course, to expand our membership, and we're looking to see how we can do some outreach. And we're in the formative stages right now, and it's interesting to hear your. About leaders. I was just listening to your last conversation.
Well, this whole idea, that's going to be something that will be interesting. It's in your group in Occupy Bergen County, which you're just forming, and if the average age is in the 40s or 50s somewhere, people will have been brought up in a different generation where a horizontal behavior is not exactly anything that you learn growing up. So it's an interesting thing how people will decide to organize the group, right?
And there are different conceptions, different concerns that are being expressed. A lot of the a lot of the concerns about, you know, how far they want to take civil disobedience. I mean, I think the concerns for social justice and economic justice prevail throughout the group. But I noticed that some members had voiced concerns about the legalities of some actions. So they're looking at some actions in shopping malls, which has come out of the most recent meeting, and appropriate enough for New Jersey. And but they're looking at, they're contacting the local New Jersey chapter of the ACLU to find out what the, you know, legal limitations are and how far we can go.
But this is a real problem, because here's the bottom line with all of this stuff. Lenin once famously said that he could never imagine the revolution starting in Germany, where people were trained to form up in lines when they wanted to buy a ticket. If they were going to assault, he said, if they were planning on assaulting the main railroad terminal, they would line up in very neat lines to buy a ticket first. The whole point here is, if we're talking about Gandhi earlier, They, the people who own and run this country, they have set the laws. They have the lawmakers in their pocket. So they've passed laws that make it illegal for the rest of us to exercise our basic rights. Here's the point, then. We have to break the law, right, which we did some of this in the 60s and people are doing now. You've got to break their law to get the real law back. And I think sometimes people don't want to pay the price, you know.
Well, I don't think that I don't think it's so much they don't want to pay the price, but I think that they have concerns that they're stepping on the toes of people that they want to attract, and I think that's a conversation. I think it's good that we're having the conversation.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I think my own personal opinion is probably closer towards what you're advocating for, and one of the other things I think, and one thing that I've been trying to push them into doing is to. I mean, this is a very, despite the fact that, you know, it's a more mature group, they seem to be very, they seem to be itching to get active and to get the demonstrations. And I've kind of, my own personal feeling, and this is my feeling, is that we should, you know, maybe slow down, look at our philosophy, look at our mission, do more planning now. I mean, I think that the whole Occupy movement's, are in kind of a fluid state at this point, you know, since the encampments have been stopped and since the movement is so young and evolving anyway. And one of the things that really struck me and attracted me to the movement, you know, was the ability to just talk, you know, within these groups, and the ability to be heard and the ability to, you know, to not have all these restrictions, on, you know, on the discussions.
Now, and also to thank God, get away from the Democratic Party. I mean, up where I live in Manhattan, they are flailing around crazy. The Democratic Party, the local Democratic Party clubs, and some of them are very big, these clubs, you're talking about hundreds, even thousands of people, the organization, if you will, they don't like the fact that something is growing out there which is totally beyond, you know, their limits, has nothing, owes them nothing, wants nothing from them, and sneers at them at the same time. So it's important to have this, like, third, it's almost like a third world movement inside our own country, you know.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you know, I may be active, you know, and there are different, you know, I'm involved with a couple of different organizations, and I may be active, you know, in some sort of political facet, but what I do in, you know, Occupy Bergen County, I mean, I may be looking, you know, to push back against some of their, you know, inherent beliefs and inherent operational tactics that, you know, that the traditional parties have, you know, and I'll do that through the Occupy movement, and I'll discuss these things through the Occupy movement, and I'll hear pushback through the Occupy movement, you know, so you know, and I really think that that's a really a vitally important thing, and you know, and I realized that when we started to set the group up, that by not having the encampments anymore, that some of that discussion may be very hard to facilitate. I mean, I think it really meant a lot for the movement that there was a place like 24/7 that you could drop in and have these kinds
of
assemblies going on.
Now all the now states and you know, and cities especially have passed ordinances and laws, and they've got all the cops in the world, military cops more or less, and they've thrown everybody out of these encampments. So the question is how to deal with this, but it can be dealt with. It will be dealt with, certainly with the new technology. This all the whole idea of flash mobs, people just showing up in places, and people do have in many cities now, they have buildings that have either been donated or leased to them that they have money to use. So we got to jump off because we got somebody calling in from Miami where they had a confrontation with the police.
Can I just real quick? If anyone is interested in coming out, you know, of course we welcome all new voices, and it's the next meeting is on February 7th at 7 p.m. and we meet at a place called the Puffin Forum. That's P-U-F-F-I-N Forum, and that's in Teaneck, New Jersey, and it's at 20 Puffin Way, off of Teaneck Road in Teaneck, New Jersey. And again, we look forward to seeing all members, and I thank you so much for the time, Mike.
Yeah, sure. And so, again, when people want to go online to find out more about you and where the meetings are and everything, where do they go?
Occupy Bergen County on Facebook, and again, you know, we'll be hopefully approving and expanding that site in the future.
Okay.
You know, again, we look forward to seeing new members. And thanks again, Mike.
Okay, thanks, Mitchell. We'll talk some more about this as it goes on. All right, this is Mike Fader, and this show is called Occupied Territory. Once again, please go to PRN.FM. Aside from our show, Occupied Territory, PRN.FM has an incredible lineup. It is probably, I'd guess right now, the best progressive radio station in the entire country, either satellite, terrestrial, whatever, you know, any kind of radio. So we've got the best lineup here. So check us out. But go to PRN.FM and look for Occupied Territory, and you can get on our Facebook page, and we welcome your posting any kind of opinions or whatever you've got. Now we have somebody with us, Kevin Young, who is with Occupy Miami, and they've had a lot of extreme activity going on down there, and we're going to find out some details about it. Kevin, you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for calling. So give us, first of all, a little bit of a history of Occupy Miami.
Okay, well, we started our occupation October 15th at the Government Center. This is after a couple of planning meetings, pretty much the week after that Occupy Wall Street formed in New York. And basically individuals down here who came together and said, yes, we have to do something, and the time is now to seize the opportunity to actually make a homegrown movement nationwide. And you know, so we got together and we planned our occupation, and during our time at the Government Center, we came up with a list of grievances for the local area, for the county specifically, grievances that the county could actually do something about. And, you know, it made perfect sense. We were right there at the county commission's office, and so we felt that was the most appropriate place to hold this demonstration and come up with this list of grievances.
So the occupation itself, you're encamped out there, are you, or were you?
We were encamped out there for over 105 days. We had one of the longest running camps and probably one of the most peaceful camps as well. We had very little instances of violence, and when we did have instances of violence, they're usually late at night, most often between people that weren't really part of the movement, but usually kind of using the movement as shelter, as a place for them to stay. Mm-hmm. We were in an area in downtown Miami that was highly populated with homeless and transient people, and so we had some of those issues kind of from the start. But we were able to form functional working groups. We held a lot of marches and demonstrations. We directly lobbied our elected representatives, Marco Rubio, Bill Nelson, Mario Diaz-Balart. So we are getting things off the ground as well. And so it was functional, but it had its issues as well. But
Most of the Occupy groups have exactly the same problem, where people just drifted into the group for the food and shelter, and sometimes things, you know, went from bad to worse. But so I guess the city was sort of tolerating you or getting along with you or whatever, or putting up with you for a while. But then what happened recently?
Well, yeah, definitely when we started, we actually had a lot of cooperation from the city of Miami Police Department, and officers would come over, you know, before or after their shifts and bring us food and water and things like this and talk with us. When we would have marches, we don't ask for permits, but they would come out and escort us and shut down traffic for us anyway, not give us a hard time and hassle us. And we went and backed them in some budgetary meetings. But then recently, over the last couple of weeks, we've heard from insiders in the county building that a lot of pressure was being put on the county and by the mayor's office, and a lot of pressure was being put on the mayor and the county by businesses around, such as Bank of America and Wells Fargo, that were in downtown, mm-hmm. that they had been calling on a very regular basis, you know, demanding that they shut down our encampment. We also find it's you know, kind of convenient that they did the closure on Super Tuesday, while most of the media was focused on the, you know, the primaries.
Oh, sure.
We also know that with Rick Scott and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney down here over the last week, when they were campaigning down here, they were not very happy that our presence was still here and that our camp was still functional. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of inside political reasons to shut it down, and that's that, you know, the timing of doing it on Super Tuesday was definitely, you know, to keep as little media attention on us as possible.
So what actually did happen?
So the police officers, the county came out and they gave us an eviction notice. I believe it was Monday. We'd known about it by Saturday that it was coming, and then Monday we had a meeting with Jerry Hall, which is he's kind of oversees on whether or not the permit could be reapproved. Mm-hmm. And we actually outlined an exit strategy with him that hadn't been officially approved for the General Assembly. It was something that was in a working group, and that we thought it was a good idea, something that we could work together with the county to beautify the area, take more control over the camp, and run a cleaner and better occupation.
Yeah.
And the county would have no part of it. We offered to do the labor ourselves. We offered to resod. We offered to expand the garden. We offered to, you know, confined to a smaller amount of tents for committee members only, and the county just would not listen to anything that we wanted to do and just said, nope, you're out. So Tuesday, yesterday, they came in at 5. They started reading the eviction notices. At a little after dusk, they started coming in. And, you know, we had 6 people locked down inside, just link arms, and an impromptu barricade was built around them, and then a larger group of supporters encircled that barricade, and, you know, just tried to give a lot of good positive energy and just try to keep, you know, be there for general support for the people who want to just make a stand and make a point of holding the territory and holding the area. Police pushed the supporters out and then pushed us off the sidewalk. They told us we had to leave the park. They said nothing about the sidewalk or the general area. And so then the riot police continued to close us off. Miami-Dade County riot police pushed us off the land, and then the city of Miami police marched us down the street and pushed us down the street, which I found kind of very disappointing, since we had back then in budgetary committees and they were still so ruthless with us. And I personally still have marks on my back from, you know, getting jabs with batons, and you know, they were really very unpleasant and had a lot of overreaction last night.
you're listening to Kevin Young, who's from Occupy Miami. So we only have a couple of minutes before we have to move on. So what now? What's up from Occupy Miami? Where do you go from here?
Well, we still got a lot of stuff going on. Right now, people are at government centers throughout the day, just trying to talk with people as they come by, and, you know, make sure that everybody's still in contact with one another, make sure we have everybody's contact information. Tomorrow, we are scheduling a press conference at the courthouse at 4 p.m. to go over our list of grievances and field a panel, have a panel to field questions from the press. On Friday, we have 2 marches, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. So the movement definitely continues. Other Pottinger camp sites are being brought up because Miami has the Pottinger law, which states that homeless people have the right to tent outside. They have no other place to go.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
We plan on doing homeless outreach as well with the Pottinger law. The movement is definitely still going forward. Working groups are pretty much getting more consolidated and pushing through on their individual tasks, and we still will be holding general assemblies every Saturday. We'll be holding them still at the government center. They didn't say we couldn't do that.
Let me ask you one last question, and we really mm-hmm. do have like about a minute or two left. You know, I was just talking to somebody from Alternet who covered what happened out in Oakland the other day, where mm-hmm. People actually did sort of break into City Hall and trash the place. At one confrontation, people were throwing things at the police. Some of the objects were pretty heavy. And we're talking about this whole idea of horizontal, you know, organization, and comparing it to what happened with Gandhi over in India, which was definitely not a horizontal organization. It was from the top down, and it worked pretty well. It seems to me, this is my opinion, that there's a limit to how far a horizontal organization is ever going to carry this movement. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yes, no. I mean, I can understand your perspective on that. I personally don't. I believe in a diversity of tactics, and I believe that everybody has, when you're in a horizontal organization, a horizontal movement, you kind of have to let you kind of have to understand that people are going to have their own perspectives and their own viewpoints. I believe right now at this stage, we need to stay as horizontal as possible because we need to bring more people into the fold. I think by going into a more structured vertical organization, you start cutting people out who are very passionate about these issues, but maybe not so well organized, and then feel like they become disenfranchised. So at this point in the game, I definitely believe in the horizontal structure. I believe in the process of consensus and direct democracy, and decision making. But I also believe that people need to respect facilitators, and the role of the facilitator, where it is not a position of leadership or of authority, but is a position that is, just for function.
All right,
to respect that function.
All right. Well, we do have to move on, and so thanks very much for coming in, and we'll check with you from time to time, and we'll talk to you on different occasions and see what's happening down there. Kevin Young, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, I appreciate it, and I appreciate what you're doing down there. All right, this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. We only have a couple of minutes left. I have to say that after watching all this and listening to this from the very beginning, I and being a student of history and seeing what happened in the 60s and all, you look at the civil rights movement in this country. It was a perfect example. There is a limit to what a horizontal group can achieve. Let me use a metaphor from the other side entirely. Imagine a bullet that you're aiming at something to shoot something, or an arrow that you're shooting at a target, which is what's happening here. There's a target, get money out of government, stop people from being bribed, make the country truly more democratic. You're aiming at this target. If you shoot, 55 small, thin arrows, kind of wobbly, at a target, who knows what'll happen? But if you've organized into one laser-like focus, one arrow, one bullet, to use a certain, funny metaphor, you have a much better chance of striking right in the middle and having stronger force. Gandhi's group was from the top down and democratic at the same time, and Martin Luther King's group was democratic from the top down. But it was a structure. It was not a horizontal structure. There's a limit to that, and I hope the Occupy group gets it together and understands that. You can't just be anarchist forever, because you'll just go in 52 different directions and nothing is ever going to be achieved that way beyond a certain recognition that there's a problem in the world. But that's as good as it gets. Also, I hate to say this, but in the 60s, before the Chicago police beat the hell out of people and killed a couple of people eventually who died from their wounds there, and before people got shot to death at Kent State in 1970, there was still a lot of condemning of these hippies and these kids who didn't know any better. Sometimes what it takes, and it took this with the civil rights movement, and it took this in India, and nobody's asking for it, nobody wants it, sometimes people have to die for history to change. So we'll see what happens in Chicago in May. I'm hoping that nothing like that happens, but sometimes that's the way people have to see. They have to see blood, and they have to see grief for things to change. That way in your own life, that's the way it is in public life sometimes. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, and we will talk to you next week.